Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell. Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chatti of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Appreciate you checking out the episode, especially to you all who listen to all of the new interviews that we put out and subscribe to the series. There are new ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So if you're a big fan of music and the interviews, learning how the art is made, then I do hope you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from, including Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all the other hot spots. Just click on over there. We'll take care of the rest. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today my guest, Mr. Stephen Page. Yes, you do know him as the once singer for Bare Naked Ladies. He's been on a solo career since 2009 that has just continued to pump out high-quality music. He's a Harry Nilsson type of artist, and I love what he's doing. In fact, this year he's given us a brand new single called Isolation, very witty, funny lyrics that goes along as a quarantine song, and he and I are going to be talking about that, but also how his year took a big reroute. He was supposed to be spending much of 2020 behind a musical that he's helped write called Here's What It Takes. We're going to hear about that, how it kind of reminds us a little bit of his history with Bare Naked Ladies, but he'll tell us it's a character study that goes all the way back to the electronic duos of the 80s. Really fun stuff there. And I want to ask Stephen about theatrical writing. He's always leaned in that direction, at least the way I've heard his songs in the past. So I want to hear how that, or where that comes from. And then to the more recent and relevant stuff, he's been doing a lot of home shows very successfully through Zoom. In fact, at one point, he even sort of infamously now opened up all nearly 1,000 microphones of his audience. And well, that's a sound that we got to hear about as well. Though beyond the home shows, he stayed busy with collaborations, both with Broadway folks and his son, who does some composing work. They got to fit in one quick show before the pandemic happened, so we're going to hear about that experience as well. And what comes next? Steven's going to tell us he's got about an album's worth of songs. Now, how those songs find their way into the world, well, that's another story. And yes, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about Bare Naked Ladies. In fact, 2020 is the 20th anniversary of their Maroon record, so we'll hit on that just a little bit as well. Let's jump into it. It's Kyle Meredith with Stephen Page. I want to say first off, because it's always bad manners to give compliments right up front. I think someone had told me that. I don't understand. But your music has been a part of my life for so long. I so appreciate everything you've done. And I love keeping up with you, and especially with, you know, what you've got going on right now. The music is still great, and that doesn't happen for everybody. You're still writing at the same level that you've, you know, that top level that I've always thought you've written at. So first off, you know, thank you for what you've done.
Very kind of you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You've got a new single, and it fits in with it, too, because Isolation came out, which, of course, is about the moment that we're in. But as I read, you were sort of ahead of the curve on all of this, right? It didn't come out once we were really in lockdown. You started writing this before?
I wrote it like right when I was up in Canada working on a musical that I've written, and it was supposed to be premiering in June. So we were doing rehearsals and stuff for it. It was like this thing I've been working on for 7 years, finally happening. And, you know, here we are in this room with cast and crew and designers and everything else. And then you could start to see like they canceled South by Southwest and like things like that were starting to kind of drop off. And we were at rehearsals every day going, should we really still be here? And, like washing our hands every 30 seconds. And then I think it was around like Friday the 13th, I think they sent us home and said, don't bother coming in today. Just wait this out. And we kind of thought that meant like we're going to be locked down for a few days while they figure out what's happening, or maybe a couple of weeks. And so I was sitting there in the apartment I'd rented up there, kind of panicking, going through social media and news and constantly texting people. And I just started kind of compiling all the stuff that was racing through my brain at that point. And very quickly, like, wrote this song and right away sang it into my phone and posted it on YouTube. And it seemed to connect with people right away. So when I finally got home from there, when they said, we're not going forward with this thing this year, that came home and did a studio version in my basement.
It does hit one because it's really catchy. I should say that, you know, it's not just that the lyrics connect, they do, but it's a very catchy, like you grabbed onto the melody wherever it was floating out there. You know, it seems like you were ready to grab onto it, but to write topical like this, I mean, this is, you can't be in any more real time than a song like this. Had you experienced that before as a songwriter?
It's rarely been my thing, like to write a topical song, a song of the moment. Like I tend to write songs more about, either it's about a snapshot, like I look at a character that I imagine in a situation and write something from their point of view. And it's more about just, you know, trying to uncover character and story and so on. But a couple of years ago, when the Unite the Right rally happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, same thing. Like I kind of ran downstairs after seeing footage of that and wrote the song White Noise, which came out on my last record. That kind of came out in one fell swoop as well.
Do you find that's a completely different muscle as a songwriter?
Well, you know, both of these songs came out really quickly, and that's, as a songwriter, the thing I prayed for. Like, you know, Leonard Cohen has a famous quote where he says, if I knew where songs came from, I'd go there more often. And I hate that it's like that it's tragedy or it's something that makes you upset that is the thing sometimes that triggers a quick song. But I look back at you know, the songs I've written over the years, and so many of them were labor intensive, or they took, you know, I had a portion of a song that I didn't know what to do with, and it took me 3 years before I kind of figured out what the song was actually supposed to be. But then the handful of songs that came out quickly are some of the songs I'm most proud of, and they're kind of the songs I feel the least involved with the creation of.
That's so interesting. It's so, I mean, it's always a mystery how that all works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a super religious person, but it's the kind of thing where you think, and it's not like I would ever dare to think that I was chosen. It's just that this, I think, like you said, grabbing onto that melody, that's the thing. It's like that stuff is floating out there. And sometimes your brain and your spirit and everything else all kind of line up and just reach out and it's there. And that's a really cool thing.
Well, even beyond, you know, kind of the quirkier lyrics, I mean, it does summarize everything so perfectly in that line, everybody is together, but, you know, in isolation. And that's, I feel like that's got to be one of the big tricks too. It's, you are taking something very personal, but you're in, you know, you're wrapping us all within that.
Yeah. I kind of felt like, especially at that point, cause I'm not used to being always by myself. Like even as a solo artist, I tour with a trio or a band and there's crew or whatever else, and kind of always with other people. Here I was kind of by myself, you know, not with my wife or my kids or my pets or anything else, working on this show up in Canada. And my partner that I wrote the musical with, the playwright, was down the street in his house. And we were both kind of terrified to leave our houses, constantly texting and calling each other back and forth. And I kept thinking, there are people everywhere just holed up in their bunkers wondering whether to go out or not.
Well, people are finally starting to get brave, and I feel like it's the wrong time personally. I divorced, and so I take my son, you know, we take him back and forth, and we're all pretty good about that. But it's like suddenly everybody's out on the road again, and I'm experiencing traffic, and I'm like, no, this doesn't feel right yet. This doesn't feel right for me.
I'm totally with you. I'm you know, as much as like I've had shows canceled, you know, but summer tours and stuff are coming up, and probably stuff in the fall will all get canceled or rescheduled or whatever else. And I hate that. I mean, I hate that because I love what I do, and it's also my main source of income. So it's frustrating and it's anxiety inducing. But at the same time, I'm not risking it. And I totally get the same thing. Like my stepson lives with us, and his father lives about an hour away. So, you know, there is the back and the forth. And even that, like, made me a little anxious early on. Luckily, raised being safe and healthy. But, yeah, you go to the grocery stores now, and people are aggressive out there now, too.
It's weird. It's just so weird. Yeah. You'd mentioned the play, and I wanted to kind of hit on it, you know, because it was supposed to premiere. It was supposed to premiere this summer. And to be working on something for 7 years, as you said, to have that put on pause, here's what it takes. Can you tell me a little bit about that, like what we can expect whenever it does happen?
Sure. It's a musical about a band, about a duo, not the band that I used to be in. It's not, but it is certainly, there are elements of this, you know, it's about the spirit of collaboration. And those things I certainly learned from my years in Brandy Ladies, and we get started as a duo. So that's kind of the jumping off point for it. But it takes place, it's about 10 years earlier than us. Like the character is about 10 years older than me. So they started a band in about 1982, and it goes from then up until the present. And so the music gets to kind of evolve and starts very kind of synth pop. I imagine them as being part of this legacy of these, you know, one of my favorite forms of music, the duo, the electronic duo, like Soft Cell or Eurythmics or Sparks or whatever else, where you've got the kind of the studious young scientist behind the keyboard and the emotive front person. And that's kind of the archetype that these guys were built around. And then they kind of try to make it work through the rest of the 80s and 90s and eventually break up and then come back together later in life and kind of look back at their story. But musically, basically my last two albums are largely songs from this musical, which I didn't want to admit when I put the records out just in case the musical never happened. But then there are a bunch of songs that are in the musical that aren't on the last two albums, because as we've been working on it, you start doing stuff like, oh, this character here needs to have a song here to say this thing or to move this part of the story forward. And that's a whole different way of working than I've ever worked before, which is weird and exciting. And also in theater, when you're in rehearsal and everybody's sitting there waiting and they go, yeah, we need to change this part or we need to cut this song and add a new one here. And you got to come up with a new song for them to sing tomorrow. You don't have the luxury that I usually have of mulling stuff over for hours. And sometimes it makes for some pretty great stuff.
That's I'll mention really quick. I just had Russell from Sparks on the show last week, and speaking of amazing duos, and I know I'm getting off track here, but just they're still blowing my mind. They're 20 some odd albums in, by the way, and that group is still amazing.
Yeah, so they never cease to amaze me. You know, some records I love more than others, but like you could choose one record per decade and go, that is amazing.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah. You know, each decade you look at, there's something absolutely kind of groundbreaking and stellar about them, and hilarious and smart.
Right, and they're still there. They still got that, whatever that is. They still got that. It doesn't surprise me that you are part of something like this, though. With Here's What It Takes, because to me, your music has always leaned toward theatrics. You know, whether you would have called it theatrical music or not, I mean, that's a different definition. Sure. But you've always sort of leaned there. Where does that come from for you?
You know, I don't know. I think I certainly always enjoyed. I mean, I still enjoy performing. I like the theatricality of it. I like the being able to put on a show. And even like when you do a solo show with an acoustic guitar or a trio, as I play now, there's still an element of theatrics to it. And some of that is about appearing to be more relaxed than you are, or for appearing to be less prepared than you are. All those kinds of things are part of the theatrical nature of putting on a show that makes people feel at ease or ill at ease or whatever it is you're trying to get them to feel. It's a manipulative thing, but hopefully for good, not for evil. But when it comes to writing, I've always liked writing music that explored character, or the idea of here's somebody, like the I in a song is not always me. People might always assume that, but you know, I think what the I is being some person I've imagined. And I'm not going to explain who that person is in the song. I'm just going to let them sing that song, which is what happens in musical theater. You know, the rest of the play details who that person is, and the song details what they're thinking or feeling.
So I know because of all this, though, it's given you the opportunity then to do this Live From Home series, which has been really interesting to kind of see how that's, for a lot of artists, to see how that's, you know, how they've dealt with that and found the creative ways to get through that. For you, I mean, it's obviously different than playing to an audience, a live audience. But what has the experience been like so far?
Well, I've chosen to do them on Zoom. So it means I actually do get to see the audience. That's the crazy thing about it. It's like I sing into a webcam and, you know, I do it in my studio. Hopefully the sound is decent and stuff, better than me singing into my phone. And I sell tickets for these things and we sell them out. It's like, you know, the maximum you can have on a Zoom call is 1,000 people. So 1,000 people come and watch on their phones or their iPads or their computers. And you can see them and see their response. It's not the same. It's not exactly the same as sitting in a venue and really, like, you know, when you tell a story, you can feel whether you're losing the audience or whether you can keep going. And you can't fully tell that on a, you know, watching people on a Zoom call. But I think not only is it great for me, it's great for the people on the call to be able to see other people in their living rooms or kitchens or backyards and have a little bit of a sense of community when they're listening to music together. So it's actually been kind of, well, it's been very moving for me. And the weirdest thing also is, like, I finish with these shows, I do like a full length set and I'm drenched in sweat. It's as if I did a show in a club or a theater or something like that. Like, it's still, I'm going for it. And it's something I think, I don't know if I would do that if I was just singing into an empty lens.
Yeah, I did see the, of course, you unmuted nearly 900 mics of your entire audience. What's that exactly sound like when you unmute 900 computers on your end?
It sounds like what I think opening the gates of hell sounds like. I mean, I knew it was going to be chaos, but what I thought was I actually had some friends helping like to co-host this so they could, you know, mute and unmute the stuff for me. And so I said, okay, go ahead and unmute it because it's a sing-along part of the song, Chorus Girl. I thought it'd be really funny to just have this mess just for, you know, a few seconds and I could say, okay, mute it. But when that happened, it was just this cacophony and the whole program just about died. Like the whole Zoom chat almost ended. Like when we tried to mute everybody, some people's mics just stayed on anyways and we couldn't turn them off. So then you could hear people talking. It was just, it was joy and chaos all in one.
The demons of the internet coming through the hell gate.
But they were helpful demons.
I know this has also given a lot of people chances to take on collaborative projects that they might not have had time for. We've seen, you know, classic movie casts be able to get back together because they got nothing else to do. And I've seen that you've been able to do some stuff like that as well. I mean, these guest appearances, there was one that was a Broadway thing about staying 6 feet away. I mean, do a lot of these come through at this point? Are you able to take on stuff that you wouldn't usually?
Yeah, I mean, I actually do have a lot of requests, and I'm always flattered that people remember I exist. But, you know, you also make friends along the way. That Broadway one was done by this guy, Eli Boland, who, I don't know if you saw the John Mulaney special, the Sack Lunch Bunch on Netflix. He co-wrote all the songs for that, and the documentary Now Co-op Sondheim parody and stuff. And I loved that stuff. I just thought those songs were amazing. So I had to reach out to him a few months ago just saying, I think these songs are great. Turns out he's a fan of mine, which is awesome. So when he put this song together, asked me to be part of it, which I was thrilled to be part of. And then, you know, I also have this other band called the Trans-Canada Highwaymen, which is four frontmen from four Canadian bands. So it's myself, Chris Murphy from Sloan, Mo Berg from The Pursuit of Happiness, and Craig Northey from The Odds. And so we all kind of play each other's songs and trade off instruments, and we, you know, tour and have a good time doing that. We haven't been able to be together, so we've been making videos in our basements and backyards and stuff. We're in the middle of our third one right now. We did one version of a Brand New Lady song, Alcohol, that's out there now on YouTube and stuff. And then there's another one of a Sloan song, and now we're recording a Pursuit of Happiness song. So that's been a fun thing to be able to, a fun project.
I'll tell you, I think those moments are important, especially for an artist, if you have those opportunities too, because, and I'll try not to get too heady here. I was reading a report recently where some scientists say the weird thing, the really weird, funny thing about all this is we'll forget most of this. In a few years, you know, it'll be a pop culture moment, but because we weren't using our brains and our memories or to make memories, you know, we weren't doing anything to make memories. There's not going to be much to latch onto. And I think that's why the collective moment of everyone said March felt like it lasted so long, but where the hell did April go? You know, it's in those moments. So to be an artist, to have those moments, I think that's, you've got like the only hope possible to be able to say, no, I was there. I was there.
Yeah, that's amazing. That actually, that makes me feel very good. Cause I mean, right, I've been writing a song right now about my own feeling, especially before I started these live from home shows where, like it's been this kind of wave. Like it started with anxiety when I wrote Isolation, and I kind of raced to finish that recording. I'd never tried getting stuff up on streaming services myself or without a label or anybody else. Like, you know, learning stuff. And I love to learn how to do things. So that was like a big blast. And then it just kind of crashed. It just felt like kind of going home from a tour for a couple of weeks, like lying on the couch and watching Netflix. And then there's no next tour to get up off the couch for. And it was like depressing. And then I started doing these shows and I kind of started to get energy again. I'm writing, but I started writing a song that's, I'm in the middle of recording now, that it's kind of about that, my feeling of like, what am I going to have to show for this time? We all thought we were going to make, you know, write a novel, or, you know, the old Shakespeare wrote King Lear under quarantine pressure that a lot of us are putting on ourselves. And, trying to write a song about that, and then realizing as I'm doing this, oh, I guess there's something to show for it.
Yeah, Shakespeare didn't have Netflix. I think that's the other part of that.
I know. If he had Netflix, he'd be watching one of those dating shows over there. I haven't gotten that far. I've almost emptied Netflix, but I haven't watched the dating ones
yet. Yeah, same. I haven't done that. That's a line. It's a line. I'll say that. It's a line. On the lighter side of things, on the cooler side of things, before this all happened, because I wanted to bring this up too, you got to fit in like one more really cool show, and you got to work with your son, who I didn't know until this, is a conductor as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, I have three sons, and they're all musical, but all in different ways. So my eldest is actually just finished his master's degree in conducting at Bowling Green in Ohio, and he's also a composer and arranger. So we've been doing these symphony shows, and he had done a couple arrangements for us, but this one we did in the winter was an opportunity for him to actually come and conduct the show, which was amazing.
That's got to be a cool point. Like, I'm a father, like I said, I have a 12-year-old. Who knows if we'll ever be able to collaborate in a way like that, but I got to think that, you know, having those moments like that, that's got to be something really special.
Oh, it's amazing. Nothing feels as good as that, especially the fact, honestly, as a dad, the greatest thing is when your kids actually want to do something with you. Like, I've been very lucky. I've never been in a position where I've embarrassed my kids or where they, you know, not wanted to do stuff with me. But the fact that they've, you know, they're grown up now and they still like what I do and want to bring what they do to it, it's the greatest feeling.
Now, I can't imagine from, you know, if you're a child of someone who has had, you know, success over the decades, for them to be able to look at all of those moments of what you've been through, the young years, I guess, is what I'm looking at. You know, those early years, those early tapes that I think I'd want to hide from my kids just because I look so embarrassing. You know, you might not embarrass your kids, but you've been embarrassed.
Oh, totally. But they were there for a lot of that stuff. Like, you know, all that time, like in the 90s, you know, my eldest would have been, you know, 2 when Stunt was the big album. So he was around, like, grew up on the tour bus, saw the shows a million times. It was just part of his life. So he feels kind of sentimental about it, I think. And also the other great thing about my kids is they're all nerds in the best way possible. Like the dad. Like, so they don't have any desire to be cool. They would rather be quirky and themselves. And so that's like, and that's always being welcome, you know, and encouraged. So that's exactly who they are.
I love that. I love that. Well, I'll wrap up with a what's next question, because you do have, you know, the 2-part album in the rear view that connects, as you said, to Here's What It Takes. Is it, you think it's just going to be these little one-off songs right now, or are you planning, are you able to plan something bigger right at this moment?
I actually have like a good, I would say, an album's worth of songs that are in various stages of completion. Like, you know, some of them are basically done, and I'm kind of waiting to decide whether I do them fully by myself, or do I do them with my trio, or do them with a full band, that kind of thing. But albums are weird. Like, you spend so much time on these. Just for me, it's endless. The hours of me editing and re-recording and deciding and mixing and whatever else, and then you put a record out. And it feels like nobody notices and nobody hears. But you kind of have to do it. Like, in order to book shows, people won't book you for concerts unless you have something new out, no matter how, whether your best years are behind you or not, from a sales perspective. I guess they feel like that's part of the publicity and promotion kind of engine. So you have to keep productive. And then also, as an artist, you have to keep productive. But what's the best way to release it? So I will probably do a bunch of one-offs and then an album is probably the short answer for that.
Yeah.
Long, short answer.
Well, I think a lot of artists are doing that. And I think a lot of artists see that, too, as, you know, the long game. We've got enough history of pop and rock and roll behind us now. I think you can see the long game, that if any artist sticks around it long enough, you know, maybe you have the 10 years. If you're lucky, you have the 20 years, and then you kind of have the downward slope before everybody says, I miss you. Where are you? And you're like, I've been here the whole time. I'm putting out music. And they're like, it's the comeback record 10 years later, whatever, you know, and it's...
Well, and that's totally how it is. Like, you know, maybe the media at large hasn't fully picked up on that, but like the fans have. Like, I was always doing shows in the years from, let's say, 2009 when I left Bare Naked Ladies until 2016. I was doing shows all the time and, you know, doing these okay numbers and stuff, but like people just felt like I was invisible. So they were saying, like, what happened to you? I was like, I don't know, am I here? But something over the last 3 or 4 years, and part of that is making a more concerted effort to really tour. Like, really, rather than doing one-offs and 3 this week and 2 next week and whatever else, but really getting out and touring hard, like I was a 22-year-old again, it's really been great because people are coming and people are connecting to it. And I'm loving it. Like, you know, I used to kind of dread, I got to the point where I started to dread long tours and times away from home. My kids are grown now, too, so it's a different thing. But I just enjoy it. I enjoy the people I tour with, and I enjoy doing the shows. So I think that's probably the answer. And I think albums are just, they're like, to me, they're like novels. If I was a novelist, and I wouldn't want to just only release short stories as much as I might be proud of them. I think you kind of want to be able to signpost your life by saying, this is what I did in this year. That's how I've measured time for the last 25 years or so. So I may as well keep doing that.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, you were, even if it was by accident, you were a trendsetter of how to be an indie artist right from the yellow tape beginning, you know, in 1990 or whatever that was back then, to see you still finding ways, whether it's the Live From Home series or what. I mean, this seems like what you're really, really good at on the business side of it. I love seeing that. I love watching it. So I'll keep watching that. Yeah. And as far as signpost goes, and you know, this, I'll just mention this, but one of those signposts, Maroon, I know turns 20 this year, as albums always continue to age and find anniversaries. I recently went back and revisited that one. I probably hadn't listened in a while, and that is such strong songwriting from your songs. I've loved it, but it was a nice reminder anyway.
It's always been my favorite of the Benny Cadetti's records, and I listened to it a year or so ago and was like, oh, because I know I started doing some of those songs again. So I was going back to do arrangements for the band and that kind of thing. It's like, this record, like, the energy and the recording and stuff is so great on that record. I'm super proud of it.
Well, I love what you do. And Stevens, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk to me about everything you have going on. I'll definitely be, you know, paying attention with these Live From Home series. And I can't wait to hear what the next song sounds like as well.
Well, it was great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Take care out there.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
My thanks to Stephen Page. Again, the brand new single is called Isolation. You can find it out there right now. Really looking forward to what comes next with him. Thanks to you as well for checking out this episode. Before you get out of here, if you're not already a subscriber, I do hope you hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from so you can keep up with us and the brand new interviews that we put out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Find us at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening now, wherever you get your podcast from, type in Kyle Meredith with subscribe. We'll take care of the rest. It's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover new ones, know what's happening in the music world. After that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, that's WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound, they've got your music and film news. You can also find me on just about any social media platform, at Kyle Meredith. Like and follow along there as well, please. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.